to advertise, email podcast@thisismatchy.com.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Matt G.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.
So, it's only September. Erling Haaland is on 7 goals and Liverpool have 3 wins, 3 goals and 3 points from an Old Trafford that can't plug the ceiling or the goals themselves. This is Onside ZA, brought to you by Betway. Get way more and more over than our English Premier League action. It's a big day for the Betway Premiership. Big event for the press, a lot of big announcements, a lot of big news. We're going to be covering all of that today. I'm Marco Martins. I'm joined on the show today by Mr. Len Moleko.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, sir. Tseppy, darling.
Hi, darling. It's so nice to have you close to me.
And everybody's favorite super sub. And we have another special guest joining us on the show here today. But Len Moleko, I wanted to have one word with you before I switch over and head out and say goodbye to the ballers. First of all, again, welcome to all of you, the ballers. If you are joining as a new user on the Betway app, remember to use the affiliate code ONSIDEZA. Len Moleko, give us a little breakdown about what happened today where the PSL, Betway Premiership and the media met to discuss all things that are coming now.
So effectively, it was a launch of the Betway Premiership. We know that Betway, our good friends, are now the new sponsors of the league. A number of things were announced, some of the initiatives that they're going to be doing during the season. I know a lot of people are very anxious with the fact that where's the trophy? The trophy is coming. The trophy is designed. The trophy was designed by famous South African artist Nelson Makamu. So we're going to see a trophy that is going to blow our minds. With that said, with a conversation that we were having with Mark from Betway, he further added that the trophy is going to be so ginormous that they're going to put all the names of previous league winners from the years gone by.
That's a good idea.
And he further added that the trophy is not going to be a Betway Premiership trophy. It's going to be a Premiership trophy, which means its legacy that it's going to carry for South African football is going to live far beyond days that will come should it happen that Betway is not the sponsor of the league anymore.
That's dope.
Wow. Super sub.
Yep.
This speaks to it's in our blood.
Yeah.
Part of this launch of the Betway Premiership. Talk to me a little bit about what it means to you in terms of legacy, because I think that there's been administrative, perhaps legislative issues in terms of legacy for the Premiership in South Africa, but football has legacy in this country.
Definitely. And I think I saw a snippet of some video. I think it's going to be a TV commercial. And that video just shows that the partnership between Betway and PSL, it's taking us back to when football was just not about kicking the ball. It was heritage. It was an escape, more so for black communities. You know, it was more than just football back in the days. It was defiance. It was a sense of belonging. And I think Betway and Premiership are bringing that back.
I love that. Tseppy, darling, your thoughts?
I think Betway is quite smart, right? Because, you know, it's great for the legacy of football, right? Mm. Where everyone's name is going to be arched there. That is a great accomplishment on their part. But I think they're smart in the sense that, you know, as much as they might not be the sponsor in the next 3 years or whichever coming amount of years, right? Mm. We will still somehow remember it as the Betway Trophy.
Yeah, they've engraved themselves, yeah.
Yeah, they is.
From that legacy perspective, it also goes to, we know that football, from a South African perspective, the legacy of it, you support Pirates because, don't know, maybe your dad or your neighbor or your grandmother supported Pirates. I support Pirates because I rode the horse with Mbanza, kind of like, you know what I mean?
Oh, wow. There he goes. Nurse is out again.
Tepi does it because she's from Soweto.
Yeah.
Mark supports Chiefs because...
It was the first game I saw.
Oh, he probably has a crush on Jessica. I don't know. But like, you know, there's a story behind it.
Yeah,
you know, that's
definitely.
What I mean.
Yeah.
And that legacy just...
It's reminiscent.
Forward. It's not... Mm. It's not a come in and out kind of vibes.
Yeah, I think this partnership is going to do a lot for South African football. I think already we can see that there's a good vibe that is happening with the games that we've seen. With I think Sundance was playing Stellies. I mean, the numbers of fans in the stadium, you could see that, you know, people are eager. And this partnership, I think it's going to get more bums in the seats.
I think so. And I think I have one important point to make, especially when we were talking about the trophy. And I think it actually, having spoken to the team at Betway and listened to their thoughts and their reasoning behind everything, is that it's not about them. It's not about them. Mm. It's about football and how they can help and then attach themselves to that afterwards.
Wow.
So there are benefits to them, but their thought is football first. That's their first thought in this whole Betway Premiership partnership is football first. What can we do to help the game?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
Mara, okay, yes, my friend.
On that, it's again going to the legacy and the whole no DNA, just
RSA,
Premier League, Premiership football kind of vibes. Like you get people who paint their houses in Swallows colors.
Yeah.
Pirates colors.
That's normal in Soweto, actually.
You know?
Maybe.
And please understand, for you to actually take the decision to paint an entire house black and white with skull and bones, and you go into the house, the couches are probably black and white. Or,
okay. You have to finish this thought on the tagline.
It's in your blood.
It's in your blood. Right now, while we're saying that, I'm going to just say goodbye to the Ballers. I will be back later on the show, but for now, I'm going to say goodbye. But watch this. Just watch this. Shots, take it away.
Lalela. Umlilo ovusa ilangabe lothando obungapheli. You see, it was this game that turned boys into giants. This game was once our proudest weapon of defiance. When our history was still written in black and white, football refused to listen when it was told to keep quiet. We had powerful names that must never grow old. Defenders would stop nonsense, and strikers that would make your blood run cold. Ungabakhohlwa mama, who raised us to be proud and bold, while our fathers went north to feed us from the mines of gold. Through all this time, ibhola likaze lisishiye, sikhule nalo, asitukasi. As I'm a 90s, so tell I'm a black Jesus. But do they know how everything stopped when Jomo stood on business? We have a Kumbula Oscar on Osporo, who dazzled before all Lodge no Majora. Even today's aces inherited the name from those who came before. All of them are legends forevermore. But we can't only look back at what was done before. Just remember, these vast arenas used to be nothing but despair and dust. In football, forever we trust. Usavutha lo mlilo. Buza kwabaziyo. Bazokutshela. Lisegazini. Forever.
Yes, we back right here on Onside ZA, brought to you by Betway, where you get way more. And we've already spoken about the Betway Premiership, but we're going to get into it just now. It'll be rude of me not to welcome our guest in the house, Mr. Mo Flavor.
Thank
How
you.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Len, long time, bro.
Yeah, it's been very long, eh?
Damn. Like,
yo, it's been forever.
The last time I saw you, we were here.
In fact, exactly. And yeah, I mean, it's been a very long time. So good to see you again.
No, but good to see you. And lovely to have football chats with you because I know you've been a suffering supporter for... What am I, 10, 14 years?
Have you not
years,
lost ne? Count? Like, I've lost count.
It depends on which team you're referring to.
I think we know which team you're talking about.
Matepo, are you good? Like, we have to do
why
the...
Why are you using my full name?
Footballers.
Footballers
are also polite to the ladies in the house. So that's... We just get that out the way.
Hello, Muti.
Are you well?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be here.
Yeah, we're talking about the Betway Premiership. We're talking about the legacy of football in this country. Where did you start supporting the team that you support now?
Which team is that, actually?
So,
you will reveal. You will reveal.
No, you see, Super Sub is going to take it exactly where we have to go.
Okay.
Because we all know that Kaizer Chiefs is the biggest club in the country, right? And this is not something that...
In numbers, of course.
...was born yesterday. No, not just numbers. You know, pedigree... impact on the sport in South Africa
and continentally
and my grandfather had a football team in Soweto called City Ramblers, and this was back way back when, right? I think if you Google the only team that beat Pirates Super Sub 11-1, you'll find that the answer is the team that I'm talking about now. And when Kaizer Motaung formed Chiefs, I think some of the players from City Ramblers were part of that initial group.
Oh, wow.
Because I think, as we know, there were players from different clubs, you know, amalgamated into Kaizer Chiefs or Kaizer 11. I can't remember what it was called at the time. I don't even think I was born. One of the players actually that played in my grandfather's team is Kulus Bia.
Oh, yes, that's so.
Yes.
Wow.
And others, some have passed on, etc. So Kaizer Chiefs was then embedded in my family on that basis. Mm. My grandfather never joined Chiefs. I think one of the things he always says is, hey man, I should have joined this guy when this guy was saying, let's do this thing. But essentially, Chiefs has always been a part of our family for that reason. And I think if you look at what's been happening over the years, it was the right place to be for a lot of football-loving supporters. If you look at all the greats that have come from Kaizer Chiefs, Bofani Madida, you know, Dr. Kumalo, Jabu Pule, Eskuse, you name it, right? And players of different kinds, Neil Tovey, Lucas Radebe. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And so Chiefs was a happy place for a lot of people, whether you were a Chiefs fan or not. And so it's obviously very different now. I think Len was trying to allude to the drought. You know, stating the obvious, it has been a long time since Chiefs has really experienced glory, and not that it can't, but that's where we are now.
What is lacking then? What would you say is that one thing that the Chiefs of now is missing or needs to somehow rekindle in order for them to reach their glory days again?
Well, we know it's not the money. I mean,
that's not the money,
because if you look at how much money we've wasted on players that have done nothing for the club. You know, and the entire exercise of bringing players in that do nothing for the club, money's not the issue. If you look at how much Chiefs have invested over the years in building themselves as a brand, as a machine, where everywhere they go in the country, you know, the arenas are full. All of that is in place, except the football.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult to watch Chiefs and not understand what we play, what our philosophy is about from... how we scout players, if we bring in players in, when we develop players, what kind of players are we developing? What do we have in our minds? You know what I'm saying? If you're getting a youngster from the Chiefs development teams and you're planning to build them up into the first team, what is the plan and what
are you indoctrinating them with?
Like, and how do we play? Do we have a style, you know, that is easily identifiable without being a technocrat? Do we have a style? I don't know if we do. Chiefs has always been a team full of great players who play great football and display great skill with the ball, elevate the game. We don't have that now.
But I would say in the past 10 years or so, bar the coaching merry-go-round that has been happening, because you do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Which player would you say, like, okay, this is a Kaizer Chiefs type player? This is the quality player of Kaizer Chiefs' level.
Itumele Nkune, for me, is that player. Mm-hmm. You look at how he's coming to the club, it's well documented. He was almost never meant to be a goalkeeper. It was almost by accident, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the way he developed himself from a young age, he peaked very young. He had responsibility on his shoulders from a very young age. Even in the days when Stuart Baxter was there, winning the league with Chiefs, etc. And not only did it benefit Chiefs, right, the development and Kune thriving, it also benefited Bafana Bafana, the national team, definitely. Right? So in essence, for me, Kune embodies exactly what Chiefs is about. If you look at player development, harnessing, you know, sharpening to become something meaningful to the football club, to have a legacy. And I didn't like what was going on in the last couple of years, in his twilight years, as if he never had a career.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes football fans are very quick to forget, you know, what a phenomenal player he's been.
25 years, eh?
Exactly. And when you look at, when you juxtapose with other players, goalkeepers in Europe who go deep in to their twilight years and they make mistakes and all these things happen.
Naturally.
They don't get the same kind of criticism. It's almost like, but you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So now because we're all speaking about Kune, and I mean, news came out last week that they are looking at making him part of the marketing department. Would you share the same sentiments? Would you say that he should be going to marketing, or do you believe that he still has it in him, probably a season or two, to continue being a shortstopper?
I don't know whether Kune studied anything marketing related. I'm not sure what his studies look like. So I don't know what his skill set outside of football is.
Mm.
But I'm sitting here thinking, is there anything Kune doesn't know about football? Playing in World Cups, playing on the continent, winning tournaments, you know, with his club. Is it a waste to put him in marketing, or is it a way of, you know, segueing him into something else in the club? The fact that the club, based on what you're saying, because I don't know what's going on in Eturena, but if that is the case, it almost tells me that they haven't thought about what they're going to do with him, with everything he knows.
That's what I said.
Or they're really just dumbing him down.
Yeah. For me, more is the thing with Kune is that, like you mentioned, he's played in the World Cup. I feel like he can contribute more giving back to the youngsters if he's still within the structures of Kaizer Chiefs. And you're putting him in a department that I feel from outside in, obviously, it's well-run. Chiefs marketing, I think it's one of the best in South Africa.
Mm.
I don't know if it's going to add value there, but most probably he's got some set of skills that we don't know about. But I feel like if he was to be put into the development structures of Kaizer Chiefs, I think they're going to benefit more. We can have another Kune under his wing, you know, and he can develop those goalkeepers that we actually need for Bafana Bafana, essentially.
Absolutely. So, do we need a footballing person in marketing, or do we need people who are good at building brands?
Brian Baloyi went into marketing.
Yeah, but I'm thinking,
Where is he now?
But also, why put him there? What of all the years of experience on the pitch?
Where does that go?
Be 25 years of playing for one club. You part of the family. You understand that club inside out.
Yeah.
And I think going to marketing, it's a segue to get him out, I think,
well,
in my view.
With that being said, there's this, I think it's done via Gibbs. There are these
educational courses
that the players do and they get to graduate. Perhaps.
What do you mean get to graduate? They work hard.
It's like it's given, eh?
You gotta
get honorary degree.
No, it's not small business studying that stuff there. But here's the thing, Len. Imagine if Barcelona had decided that Pep must go and join the marketing department.
What a waste.
Imagine if Deco had nothing to do with, you know, the recruitment and the scouting and all of that. Imagine if Xavi was sent into marketing.
Yeah.
You know,
or Zidane for that matter.
So I think there's no appreciation. And I'm saying this, you know, just from a very subjective point of view, without being in the walls of Naturena, I don't think there's appreciation for players at Kaizer Chiefs who have done immense work for the football club.
You can take it back to Kaizer Chiefs. Well, remember how he left?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But is it only Kaizer Chiefs?
I mean, even Doc is not at Kaizer Chiefs right now.
Because we had this conversation, I think, about 2 weeks ago, where you alluded to the fact that Sundowns seems to be like the only team that knows how to rope in their former players and almost slot them in. I mean, surprise, Muriri is one of the coaches at Sundowns.
Yep.
Mambush, I don't know what he does.
He's somewhere there. I think Godfrey Sapula is somewhere.
Sapula is also there. So it seems like there's only one club that's able to rope in former players and put them in structures within their organization. Does that then mean that's why we're seeing what we're seeing with by the MTN 8, with Sundowns at the moment?
I mean, it's interesting you say that, Len, because if you look at Arthur Zwane, for example, I mean, Mangete is a Kaizer Chiefs legend.
Yeah.
Right? He's part of a generation of players and Kaizer Chiefs teams that really were just, you know, at the peak of Kaizer Chiefs success. And he was given an opportunity to coach youngsters, which he did. Some came through his tutorship. He was given an opportunity to coach the first senior team.
Yeah.
I don't think he was given enough time. When you put someone like an Arthur Zwane to coach the first team, and you give him, I think it was a 3-year contract, I think that's fair game.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, KPIs, et cetera, and things that have to be achieved. So then the question is, how then do we grow ex-players into coaching positions at Kaizer Chiefs? I don't know. But it doesn't seem to have worked. It's almost as if they don't believe in
the abilities
or the decisions they make.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then also there are certain teams where, when you coach them, success is not a patience project. You need to hit the ground running.
The reality is that in South Africa, you go into a team and you do not unpack. Most coaches will tell you this. You never unpack your suitcase. You go in there and you try to.
That's usually Chippa figure, United, but
and the like, and many others. You don't unpack.
Reasons unknown.
Yeah, it's very spicy there. But, you know, you don't unpack because chances are there's going to be some type of influence in the manner in which you coach or how you get your personnel and the like. And that's why most coaches leave, right? So I think we need to also then look at, you know, how you've... And it's interesting that you mentioned Mamelodi Sundowns and you said it's an organization. And you talk about Kaizer Chiefs as a team. So it comes across as though maybe Kaizer Chiefs and maybe the powers that be kind of run it more personally and do not look at it from an objective perspective, and maybe that's why you might have challenges with personnel.
I don't agree with that
sentiment. Because I feel like, no offense, like maybe Mr. Bobby could be a bit of a challenge to work with sometimes, and we've seen that with other coaches. I mean, I won't mention names, but they'll say the main guy sometimes will call you and tell you, "Hey, bro, you must do this."
But it's again, we're gonna go look at the turnaround of coaches that they've had in the past 10 years.
It's crazy.
It was almost Bafana-esque for the longest time. Right. And you look at their counterparts. You look at Sundowns. Sundowns has had how many coaches in the past 10 years?
You can count them.
Yes, three.
With one hand.
Count them. Yes.
Yep. Pirates also, you can count them. And you look at the return that those two teams have had versus the revolving door. But who makes the door to revolve? It's not the players. I'm coming towards your sentiment. It's not the players.
Mm.
So there is a power that is there somewhere that says, "Oh yeah, no, 20 games in, the fans are crying. Coach out."
Yeah. But would you say more? Like, I just want to get your thoughts on this. Would you say maybe the powers that be, you think they have reached the ceiling in terms of taking the teams forward, where maybe they need to step back and get somebody that is capable to run the team forward? Because, I mean, the decisions that have been made there, it's questionable.
Yeah, what we need is new ideas.
Yeah.
Right? And in the context of understanding, and as we were told before, that it is a family business, and maybe that justifies the proximity you talk about when you talk about, you know, personal, etc. As much as Kaizer Chiefs are an organization, one of the best run football clubs. In fact, I remember Gavin Hunt, when he signed for Chiefs as coach, and he was like, he has never... worked in any club that operates like that.
Yep.
But the bottom line is that every organization needs new ideas. And it's a question of whether somebody there is bold enough to make that call.
Yeah.
To say, current crop, whether you leave or not is immaterial, but what we do need is new ideas.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's through bringing in people, or whether it's bringing in ideas, whether it's bringing in advice, I don't know. But we need new ideas, because whatever has been happening at Kaizer Chiefs in the last while, and now a long while, doesn't give me the sense that we have an idea of what we're trying to get.
Yeah.
When Pito would speak about Barcelona at every post-match interview, mm-hmm. when he was a Sundowns coach,
yep.
it gave me an idea of where he sees his team going mm-hmm. forward. That was the level, that was the benchmark. And if you look at it from an African point of view, I think Sundowns is there from that perspective.
True.
I can't say the same about the team that I grew up supporting.
And it's on that sentiment, Rulani as well. Yes, many I have mocked him for almost calling him mini Pep. But
and there's nothing wrong, by the way.
That's where he sees his.
That's the bar.
That's yeah. it. Yeah. Exactly.
In the world
there's nothing wrong
right now. That's the bar.
Yeah. Definitely. And you know what I saw? Obviously, they played M10A second leg, losing 1-0 against Delhi's. And I went to the comments. And obviously, Coach Mangoba, you know, apologized because, I mean, they should have not lost that match. But anyway, many people were like, now you miss Rulan. Because it seems as though there's no direction, really. Yeah. I want to hear from the bowlers what they think about this one. Because a lot of people were saying, we actually miss Rulan. Yes, Marco?
Mo, I want to ask you, what are you looking forward to this coming Betway Premiership season? It's the first season as a Betway Premiership. We've seen... Perhaps it's not too much to read into, but Sundowns, since Rulani has left, we've seen them in the MTN 8.
Mm.
They've not been the stellar, fantastic Sundowns that we saw last season, of course.
Yep.
We've seen Pirates doing well. I think a lot of people looking at Pirates yeah. and saying, could this be their year?
Yeah.
I think a lot of neutral fans or fans of other clubs other than Sundowns, which is everyone because Sundowns don't have fans. But
wow.
Okay. Go to a game.
Can they do what you guys have on the screen there? How many clubs can do that?
But what are you looking forward to this season, Mo?
It's an interesting question because this is on the back of complete domination by Sundowns, right? First of all, I'm looking forward to the season actually starting. I mean, winning.
It's been years.
You know, we've been waiting.
Good things are worth waiting for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be interesting to see how other teams challenge Sundowns.
Yeah.
Which is not always a great thing because the assumption is that other teams have nothing to offer. But because the stronghold that Sundowns has had on the Premiership has been for so long and strong, it's almost like, okay, who's going to topple them? And what are they going to do to make that happen?
Mm.
Pirates look like a team that could win the league. Not because they've won 15 games in a row. They just look like a group, right, that is in unison.
Mm.
So I want to see if Pirates, based on this almost preseason period we're in now, are going to actually live up to that billing. You know, is Mabasa going to do that all season long and have Coach Hugo Bruce eat even more humble pie?
Yeah.
I know Stelis can do it because Stelis, you know, have youngsters coming in and out.
Yep.
You know, and yet they just keep going. Yep. So I know Stelis will be there, top three, top two. But what I'm interested in seeing is who is going to remove Sundowns as the kings of the league.
So with Sundowns, interestingly enough, I think they've lost four of their previous five games. Lost against Cape Town City. That's Rulani's game that he lost. Lost against against Pirates in the Nedbank Cup final. They won against Polokwane and then lost against Stelis twice. So five games, only one win. But knowing Sundowns and knowing them from previous years, is it fair to judge them on the MTN 8? Because we've seen this movie before.
I don't think it's fair. I mean, even this cup it's difficult for Mamelodi Sundowns. Even Pizzo used to struggle to win this cup. So we've seen this happening. You know, Sundowns' chances are they're just going to come back in the league and then start winning like they did before. Coming back to what Mo has said, like hoping that Pirates can topple Sundowns. My issue with Pirates, and I support Orlando Pirates, my issue with them is the consistency in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Pirates have they've set themselves up as if like they are a team of cups. Like they do well in cups and then they go into the league. There's no consistency. Win two games, draw one, lose, and then eventually you just drop down, you know. Mm. And that's been the issue with Jose. And I'm hoping this season it's gonna be different. And there's a vibe that is like those guys are united. There's a vibe. It looks like they believe that this is the season where they're gonna get it, you know. And yeah. I'm hoping to see what they're gonna do.
Yeah, and it's interesting you talk about that because I don't know why that happens. Why do teams specialize in different tournaments? Mm. Yes, from a tactical point of view, coaches have said often that cup football is different. Mm-hmm. There's something different. It's about the here and the now. It's about the game today. Mm. It's not about the next five-game cycle, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have 5 games in a knockout competition.
It's a wafa-wafa situation.
Exactly. So yeah. Is it the mental, and is it within the players or the general technical setup, the mental approach to tournament football and the league to say, you know, some teams are just better built for spells of 6-7 games unbeaten,
yeah,
but can't do the same job, you know, when it comes to a cup tournament in a game where you have to beat Stellies, right, to move over to the next round. For Pirates, the other test is going to be what happens in CAF.
Yep.
Yeah, true.
You know, that's, and do they challenge. Have the stamina,
yes,
right, to be able to get through all the different competitions that they're in. So I think if they do it well, it will be great for the team. It will set themselves up well to possibly contend for the league without having a gap. Because
yeah.
That's the other problem, right? Some teams peak towards the end,
yeah.
But Sundowns have created such a gap.
Yeah,
it's late. Yeah, that's their strategy.
I remember Len was saying that certain teams have just given up.
Yes.
Play for what is left.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's why, you know, if you are smart, if you know that you are not a top 8 team, for example. Okay, let me say if you are top 8 team, say you are 7th or 8th position type of team, you want to take advantage of such competitions, M10-8, for example, because... You know, you know that you don't have enough legs, probably. You don't have longevity, but you can focus your energy on a competition because, number one, psychologically, it's going to assist the players, right? And also, it's some money there. There's 8 million, at, you know, up for grabs. And chances are your team is not doing well financially. So I think, you know, it's disappointing that the top teams that end, you know, number 1, 2, 3 are the ones that find themselves once again playing the finals. I'm expecting Polokwane to have fought so hard that they find themselves in a final because that's more money for them. And also, chances are they might be, you know, have many injuries towards the end of the season or mid-season. At least they have something to show for it because the reality is that you cannot just not have any type of accomplishment within the season.
Stellies is able to... So on Stellies
is a top 3 team now, my friend.
Yes. And one, they've been very patient with Steve Barker.
Yeah.
He came in as coach. They got promoted. First season, they were not doing well. They were bubbling under there, 13, 14 there. And things turned around. Look where they are now.
Yep.
That's an advantage of not having fans.
Because you don't have that kind of pressure.
Exactly. There's no missile thrown at the man.
So that's what Sundowns and Stellies have going for them. Because they don't have fans.
Exactly.
And it's an interesting point, Len, because the reality is that there are teams that I feel deserve a trophy at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And Stellies, for me, is that team.
Facts.
There are teams that are just there to survive, you know, for as long as they're in the league. I mean, Maritzburg United were that team for a long time. They didn't look like a team that wanted to do anything.
Mm-mm.
For them, as long as they're in the league, they're happy. Whether they win, top 8, it doesn't matter. And you can't have that. To elevate the standard of our football, you need to have teams challenging for stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
So if there was ever a team... For me, that deserved to win cups, it certainly has to be Stellies.
And they already started. I mean, you saw them last season.
Yeah,
we're not
absolutely.
Even expecting them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Black Label. And yeah. They just came and they dominated.
I'd throw SuperSport United into that mix as well.
Of course, yeah, but they've already been winning. That's
yeah.
the thing.
Yeah, Cape Town City as well, I'd throw them in that mix.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's why I respect Kevin Hart so much. Because he's been that coach outside of the coaches that are coaching top 3.
Yeah.
That have actually disturbed the status quo.
Absolutely.
And then elevated the game. You know, he's done it with Vets when he had just ordinary players, you know, and he managed to win the league.
Mm-hmm. And a super sport that always feeds Sundowns with football players that take that club to another level.
Yeah.
A relationship that they're actually quite happy to maintain.
Yeah, it works.
Clearly, Stan Matthews is okay with, you know, he comes across as not liking it. I know Gavin seems not to like it. I mean, he's always complaining.
He's quite frustrated, yeah.
You know, and it's not his football club. But you're right. I think SuperSport, for me, what really warms my heart, and this also ties in with the Chiefs that we grew up watching, is the belief in young players, the understanding that, you know, even fresh talent can take a football club to the next level, right? And those two teams are that. Whether it's by virtue of circumstance, not having the money to buy big players, the point is, they can do it.
Yep. And Gavin has an eye.
Yeah.
And the one thing Gavin Hunt said in one of the interviews that he was doing, he was saying, when by virtue of a player coming here, and somebody is identified and said, here's a player, a Shandre Campbell, for instance,
mm-hmm.
that player knows how to play football.
Mm.
I just need to work on their mentality.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to have the right attitude. Yeah. If they don't.
But Gavin is also like a dad, you know?
Yes, they're not going to go far.
He calls all his youngsters, my son.
Exactly. He's a dad. Yeah.
Well done, my son.
Yeah. So perhaps in what SuperSport United is able to do
mm-hmm.
with youngsters, what Estelis is able to do with youngsters is perhaps what's lacking at a Chiefs or a Pirates, for mm-hmm. instance, mm-hmm. or a Sundowns for that matter.
Well, we saw Pirates trying to, sorry.
Yes, my friend.
We did see Pirates trying to address this fairly early. I mean, when we had an interview with Prof Palacios.
Yes.
Yes.
He was brought in specifically to be a technical or sporting director or whatever the millions of roles there are in football today. But he was addressing a cultural issue from young players to try and address that issue of development. And I think that's why we see the success of Gavin, is that with young players in particular, he's building a culture amongst young players to thrive within the football makeup. And I also want to echo your sentiments earlier, Mo. I think that some teams, for whatever reason it may be, are better set up for cup competitions, and some teams are better set up for long league runs.
Mm.
And some can do both.
Yeah. And Sundowns can do both, yes.
maybe when they feel like it. We don't feel like,
we have enough money.
There's only one club that wins the league year in, year out. So they're the only one can. And they're always on a cup run. Yes, they don't necessarily pick up all the cup trophies. We see Pirates have been more successful domestically.
Mm.
But in South African terms, who's in recent history as successful on the continent as Sundowns?
Yeah.
No one.
Yeah.
Also, remember that you can still pick your promo with Betway, where you get way more. Every week, you get the choice to select the promo that best suits you, from boosts on winnings to deposit matches, bonus spins, and more. You can hit the pick your promo banner within your Betway app, where you get more choice, more play, and more prizes. Mo, away from domestic football, I think we're all so excited about the Betway Premiership. We could be here all night. And it's part of the reason why I'm not really in the firing line here tonight, is because there was a bad weekend.
What's in new? Premier League. Why are you acting like this is something new?
I see where you're going to go. And I actually wanted to segue to that conversation via this. Some managers use cup competitions to actually save their jobs.
That too. There's money involved also.
There's a reason why Eric Ten Hag still has a job.
What is that reason again? Because I'm not a Man United fan, but even I want to know.
He won the FA Cup.
Yeah, no, man. I don't know what is happening there. I watched that game against Liverpool.
What's going on?
They look like players that never practice. Every time when they've got the ball, they hide behind the players. And it didn't look like it's a team that wanted to play. It is disheartening. I don't know if he's the man that's going to steer that ship forward, honestly speaking.
But half the players there were bought by him. He brought in the Casemiros of this world.
Casemiro had a bad day.
Casemiro, you know, I gave him a pass last week.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, because he's back at number six.
Mm.
Yeah, he tried.
Yeah.
But he still
But what we're also forgetting is that Casemiro, in the twilight of his career, he was playing with Luka Modric.
And Toni Kroos.
You know, playing with the likes of those players, you get to look good as well as a player. You know, he's in a team that is not functioning.
Oh, yes. Oh yeah, every nut and bolt is quality.
Yes,
it is made in Japan. You know, it's not going to fail.
Yeah,
but you can't say the same for Man United. And it's interesting, you know, with this 3-0 defeat, as if Liverpool did nothing, right? Liverpool were exceptional,
yes.
And in actual fact, they've started really, really well. We know they're a team that can go on and on and on and on. And when they start to taste blood, they stay there at the top.
Yep.
And so I'm sitting here thinking, this is going to be one sloth of a team as far as Liverpool's concerned this season, honestly.
So I actually want to echo your sentiments in a way of Casemiro from Real Madrid to Casemiro at Manchester United. It's not just about looking good because of the players who surround you. It's about what's expected from your role when you've got those players around you. And Casemiro is not Toni Kroos. Casemiro is not Luka Modric. He's not going to spray around passes around the pitch. We didn't see that at Real Madrid. So I don't know why we think he's going to achieve that at Manchester United. He's a cleanup crew. He's a real number six.
He's done a very bad job at it.
But you're talking about him doing a bad job at it. What was he particularly bad at this weekend? It was distribution. He lost the ball a lot. And that's because he was not expected to do that level of distribution. He would pass it on to players who were better distributors. And Manchester United don't have that around him. And he's being expected to do that. And I think that buck has to stop with Erik ten Hag at some point and say, you're not setting up the team to best utilize, let's be honest, quality footballers.
Yep.
You cannot spend that amount of money and not have a quality squad.
Yep.
So what is the problem? It's not the leaking roof. It's not the jacuzzi.
We've gone past that.
It's not Benny not being in the 18 area.
Yes.
You know, it's there are issues there.
Yeah.
And the manager needs to take responsibility. And I don't think any fan likes to see Erik ten Hag come with excuses week in, week out about the quality of the game and excusing his own role in the poor performances. Not to say that Man United don't have the potential to go on and have a good season. Not to say that there are a boatload of great managers for Man United to go and pick up right now and saying, fire Erik ten Hag and replace him with any one of these fantastic elements. Because I think there's a few reasons why Man United kept Erik ten Hag. One of them was that he has won two trophies in 2 years, but they've not looked good enough. And if we're going to replace him, with who? And that's the thing, with who?
The thing is, when you are coach of a team like Man United, there's a level of expectation.
Yes. Yep.
And that expectation also includes a level of consistency. So in a 15-game cycle, you know, the picture is going to look rosy.
Yeah.
It's almost going to be like the pedigree of a Man United in a 15-game cycle tells you everything you need to know about why Man United is Man United. And this is across all competitions that they get involved in. You look at Man City, for example, which is the team that I support, for very obvious reasons.
Are you my boy?
Finally, you guys
are. Now you're
very obvious reasons. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
You could look at a 15-game cycle with Man City and across Europe in the League Cup competitions, and the consistency is one thing and one thing only. They win games.
Yeah.
And it is expected of Man City to do that. I wasn't expecting Newcastle to do miracles last season, despite the fact that they got in the Champions League and there was hope and, you know, the new owners and the new energy in the club. I honestly, because it's not that easy in Europe. The competition is vast. There's so many different types of players from all over the world. The level is just on another planet. And so people don't expect much from Newcastle, despite whatever they achieved last season. But people expect everything from a Man United. And you have to consistently win.
And surely unfortunately, they're doing the opposite.
Surely at some point,
as
Man United supporters, the glory days almost feel like they left with Alex Ferguson.
Is it not giving Kaiser Chiefs?
I was going to throw that
all
in.
All we need is a leaking roof at FNB.
So,
like,
this whole legacy thing that United fans have. Yes, maybe a lot of us were not privy to the Brightons and the Brentfords and the Portsmouths when we were growing up. All you knew was Man United or Liverpool. It's like, okay, this one is winning. I'm picking this one. I'm going to support this one. But with time, things have not changed. Again, the coaching merry-go-round at United. David Moyes was there. Mourinho was there.
Solskjaer. Was it Solskjaer there?
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was there.
Yeah.
So many managers have been there, but nothing seems to change. And with now, looking at the current crop of players, the players that have been brought in, surely at some point we have to say, nah. Eric, nah.
Couldn't get
off. It's you.
Yeah, because with that, Len, if you look, it's one thing to lose a football match, but at least lose that match and we can still see your identity. I could not see that with Man United. I don't know which team that was.
Yes.
You know, the way Liverpool was, it was just a free flow for Liverpool. You know, the way they were running at the back, you know, they're off the ball run. They just open up Man United. And you ask yourself, at what point do players as well take responsibility? You know, because they look like they were hiding behind Liverpool defense and it just looks bad.
But
And what's about the worst part in a Super Sub? And in fact, the reason I said last week my picks was that Man United is going to either draw against Liverpool, because we tend to see a Man United that will really pull up their socks and really become quite valiant, especially when they're playing against, you know, a top three, top four team. I was expecting that, but they really took it in the bag. And that's quite disheartening, especially at this time of the season.
I would imagine, I've never been a professional football player in my life, but I can only imagine how difficult it is for to have players in the team that are week in, week out apologizing to fans in post-match interviews.
Yeah.
Surely that must do something to a player.
Yeah.
I mean, they're human beings. And so does Erik ten Hag have the ability to lift his players? And when the team is under immense pressure, what's the posture of Erik ten Hag? Is it, well, the players are at fault or the players need to know better? Which we have seen him do, by the way.
Yeah.
We've seen him throw players under the bus.
Mm. Yes. And
not so much with other coaches. I mean, yes, for instance, Pep Guardiola will always call a spade a spade.
Mm.
But City can lose and he'll still praise a Rodri, for instance. Yeah. So
he will protect his players.
And exactly. And I love the thing you mentioned about identity. It takes me back to a game in the Champions League a few seasons ago. I think it was in Messi's first season as PSG, when PSG met Man City in the group stage.
Mm.
And Man City were all over PSG. They played brilliant football, but they lost 2-0. But they still had their identity. They believed in the way they played. And then in the turn leg in that group stage, they obviously won the game. And so fans are not idiots either.
Yeah.
We get it. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Yeah.
But play as if you're going to win even when you lose.
Yeah. But I just want to find out, friend, because, oh, by the way, Lenny Moleko is also a psychologist, I get. So before the match starts, as they walk into...
Professor.
Crime investigator, professor.
Political analyst.
Many hats, many, many hats.
Jomo Sono's friend, you know...
But you know how you always say that, you know, you look at the players as they walk out into the tunnel and onto the pitch.
Yes.
And you see their body language.
Yes.
And what I've seen once again, and I've been obviously been quite observant with this one, where you even see that they look fearful, not even fearful, but demoralized as they go into the pitch. And just the overall intrapersonal communication of the coach, his body language already comes across as quite... not even nonchalant to a sense. And I think, and I've said this so many times, I've never really liked the man and how he just speaks about or speaks to, you know, or talks about really generally about, you know, in a post-match interview. He does not come across as a person who's warm, does not come across as a person that you can go to and say, coach, I'm so sorry, I'm not feeling well, or I have this issue and the like. It seems as though he is just stringent, he's a brick wall, you deliver and that's it.
On the contrary to that, well, on the same note, but contrary.
Yeah.
Let me start it here. Pep, you see him on the touchline.
Mm-hmm. Active.
Very animated.
Yeah.
Arteta, touchline.
Mm-hmm.
Very animated.
He's sitting there with a bottle of water.
Yes. But that's the same thing that Carlo Ancelotti does.
Needs it. That's
no matter that, there's confidence and then there's just being nonchalant.
Then you've got Carlo who's just there chewing gum.
Marak, he's a dog.
It's because he shared his gum with all the players before the game. We just don't know it.
They're communicating.
That's so weird.
So they're all in sync.
Chew on bed, Len.
Got you. But at the end of the day, I think, like, we've all been speaking about the Glazers. They gone. Yeah. Ineos is in. The roof is probably fixed now.
I'm sure.
New players have been brought in. The likes of Ugarte is in.
He's in, yeah.
Xerxes and the likes. But there's still nothing there. Whereas you look at a City, for instance, that has got Haaland who's scoring head tricks like it's going out of fashion.
Yeah, he's exhausting. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I think for any rival team, it will be exhausting.
Mm.
Even for clubs that he always scores against.
Yeah,
but that's tiring. The hallmark of a brilliant player.
Precisely. Yeah.
And I am personally excited about Erling and this era of football players. I'm doing my best to forget about the Messi and Ronaldo era.
Yeah, I know.
I'm doing my absolute best. And I think the kind of performances that Haaland gives us a similar feeling. I don't think anything will be close to that era.
No, definitely.
But it's good to see a player scoring the number of goals that he does in the role that he's designated to do that, by the way.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not talking about a midfielder who's banging goals. We're talking about a striker who's brought in to score goals. And there are many strikers in teams that when it's crunch time, just don't live up.
Yep.
Right? And Haaland is one of those players that you can bet on. So
Except in the finals
and semis. But then again,
because the bottles,
on that point, on, right? And I know I've sat here many a times and I've bashed Erling Haaland. There's 11 players on the field. If he doesn't score, somebody will score and they will win the cup.
Yeah.
So what is the issue there?
Yeah, and interesting, Super Sub, because you mentioned something about Casemiro at Madrid versus at Man United. Mm. And the thing about City is that everybody understands their roles. Clearly, as muddled up as they can be sometimes, where Bernardo's playing as a wing back and then he's whatever. But the point is, everybody understands their role. Yeah. And they lift each other like that. Mm. There's almost a sense of trust. There's a well-oiled machine. And so even when Rodri's having a bad day, or even when De Bruyne, and we've seen it, where he hasn't been at his best.
Yeah,
I mean, he still win.
Foden stepped up last season for Kevin when he was injured.
Yeah, and this is a Foden that was in the shadows, I think, the season before.
Yeah.
Right?
Really,
and so you always have that in it, in Man City. And I don't know what it is. Is it the coaching? Does Pep have better staff than Ten Hag? I don't know. You know, does Pep have better owners? You know, I don't know what it is. And it's going to be very, very difficult. We all know that the only team that can really unseat Man City is not Arsenal.
There's two of them.
It's not Arsenal.
There's two of them.
It's definitely Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, I think for Liverpool,
I've done it before.
It was COVID. Nobody was there to watch.
That's wow. So there was no.
Yeah, when a tree falls in the forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know.
Okay.
For Arsenal, I think the one thing that will be the undoing of Arsenal is.
Yo, they keep on saying 115, guys. What does it mean, Super Sub again?
No, he knows.
What is it?
No, they know what 115 is.
Oh, okay.
Ah, no.
No,
listen,
I'm just asking.
Listen, who's got cast today? Can you behave?
Me, I'm just asking. Anyways, sorry,
The only thing that's going to stop Arsenal from winning the league is Arsenal themselves.
And we saw it this weekend.
We saw it this weekend. silly thing that Declan Rice did. Those are points that you look at last season. Last season was a margin of 2 points.
Yeah.
Which, if you then go back to look, it's like, we lost them at Villa. We lost them at... So end of the season, will it be a case of, we lost them at Brighton?
Speaking of which, Rindmi, now I want to ask, why was he sent off?
Because he was already on a yellow card.
We understand
when a free kick is about to be taken, as the opposition player, you are not allowed to kick the ball away from where it's placed. You do that.
Yeah, that's dirty.
Yes.
That's dirty. It's unsportsman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why he got a second yellow subsequently, obviously.
And Mike Dean actually came out to say that it was mentioned to players that if you do that, it's a yellow card. You should know that no matter how far you kick the ball, it does not matter. The moment you are there in front and then try to kick the ball, it's a yellow card.
And he's already on a yellow that time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's those silly things, those small margins. With Liverpool being the team that's going to almost try to unseed Man City, the transition from club ball to slot ball, it just seems like karma music. Because Jürgen Klopp's football was it was rock and roll.
Yeah. Yeah. They were always
rock and roll.
Yeah.
Yes.
Heavy metal. Heavy metal football.
Right. Just boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom. It just doesn't stop.
Yeah. It's metallic.
But and players actually feels it. Towards the end of the season, you see.
But with slot, it's almost like, okay, cool. This loud music, but it's calm, loud music. Because, they still do what Liverpool does, but in a calmer approach.
Yeah.
And how long they will maintain that, we don't know. Yeah. It's still early days. I mean, your first game is against Ipswich, newly promoted. Second game, I can't remember who they played. So they've essentially played small teams thus far.
Look, but they're doing well, man. Like I was saying earlier, they're off the ball runs, man. When they're attacking, it's insane. They'll rip any defense apart, those guys, man. I think Liverpool this season they're looking good. I think they're going to be a problem for a lot of teams.
There's also the little small matter of, and I don't know why he mentioned that, when Mo Salah was being interviewed by Daniel Sturridge post-match.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that, this might be the last time I come to Old Trafford.
Oh, he said that. Yeah, yes. I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Because he's got 1 year left on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool do not look like they've said anything about him renewing.
I think they need him more than he needs them.
And at 33, I think he is.
He's 33. He's the highest player at Liverpool.
Still.
He has reached that cap.
Yeah.
it's going to be difficult for him to renew.
And what is there that Mo Salah would still want to do at Liverpool next season?
Oh yeah, he's got he's won the league.
Given what it takes to be a Liverpool player, the work rate, the expectations, what more would Mo Salah want to do at Liverpool that he hasn't done before, right? And is he going to feel like he's a part of something bigger for the club, or is he going to feel like a player that is looking to go elsewhere? Because we've seen that happen. A player playing for one team, but you get the sense that there's no sense of, I probably might be here in the next two seasons, you know? So, yeah.
It's, for me, again, it goes to back to the conversation we've had before on the show. Is it okay now at 33 for him to be like, ah, let me chase the money, Saudi league.
And go to Saudi.
And because it's even going to be a free transfer, it means that the whatever team, Al-Shabaab, Al-Hilal, is literally going to be like, yo, this is how much we're going to give you because they don't have to pay anything to Liverpool.
And a private jet and a house.
The answer is yes. The answer is yes. Go make money. You've done everything. You've won one of the best. You've won everything. You're one of the best goal scorers in Premier League history.
Yeah,
I have to bring it back to Man United fairly regularly. But who, since 2021, the top goal scorers at Old Trafford are Marcus Rashford, Bruno Fernandes,
and Mo Salah.
Mo Salah's up there on that list. He scored 10 goals at Old Trafford. He's the only player on that list that's not a Man United player.
Yeah.
But he's above players like Martial in terms of goals scored at Old Trafford, which is ludicrous. He plays one game there a season.
And Anthony.
Anthony.
Who cares?
Anthony's got the best record in world football.
But then
he's got 30 appearances in 30 appearances. And he's always three goals away from a hat-trick, Anthony.
And he's also he's almost like one eyebrow short of being Ancelotti.
That is so funny.
So all this football we're talking about killed my bet slip. Len Moleko, we gave our predictions last week. It sounds like it killed your bet slip as well.
Yes.
But you know what gave me my boostings back? As always, the Springboks. I've said this before. Whenever my wallet's looking low, bet on the box. And this weekend...
Hey, but it was close on Saturday though, eh?
I was feeling like, no, this isn't my weekend, but we recovered. You can recover this weekend as well with the momentum all yours. You can get behind the world champions with Betway. We'll have a chance to get paid out as a winner regardless of the result. All you need to do is click on the banner in the Betway app, place a match result single bet on the Springboks to win from 20 June till 28 September. And if the Springboks lead by 7 points at any point in the match, you get paid out as a winner regardless of the final result.
That's a win.
Only with Betway where you get way more. Len Moleko, just one word on the box before we go back to the football. In Cape Town this weekend, what's your thoughts?
If we don't interrupt the haka, then...
That was some type of way. I felt some type of way about that one. But anyway, continue.
I think we should be able to win. Momentum is on our side. It was Ellis Park that I was more afraid
of. The insurance company.
Why? You're afraid
of it? It's a joke. Continue.
What are you afraid of at Ellis Park, Len?
They seem to have a push.
Okay.
I know she wants me to say momentum. The All Blacks just know how to beat the Springboks at Ellis Park.
Yeah,
we've got a very bad record against them at Ellis Park. And it almost slipped out of our hands. But obviously the boys came back. But back to the football.
By the way, very, very quickly, Moleko, because everyone is asking, do you have anything nice to say about Chelsea this week?
I'm going to them now.
I'll wait.
Never a free weekend. Again...
Hot,
look,
cold.
I think, yes, they're blowing hot and cold. Maresca is new in the job.
Yeah, and I respect that.
Palace, we did say that they give them a game or two or three. Once they get in their groove, they get in their groove. But Chelsea, with all the talent that they have and the subsequent talent that they've added.
Len, what happened?
Chelsea'd.
They fired Poch.
Well, that's where the problem started.
Not
because
really.
The momentum they had end of last season, where Poch was bringing in the results, you thought, okay, they might turn the corner, even though they didn't do that well.
Yeah, Maresca's going to have a slow start to the season. Transition period. New players. Of course, it's Chelsea.
How many new players?
They're going to sign another 10 in January.
Exactly.
And they're going to struggle to get rid of the ones that are there. You managed to pick up one that they're still paying 66% of his salary there at Arsenal. You know?
What is up with that, actually?
He wasn't going to catch a game at Chelsea. Yes. Rather, at least get some money back and let the player play. And then at least if he plays well at Arsenal, you can command a signing fee in the next window. Because if he sits on the bench all season, no one's going to pay any money to get him, right? So, sure, makes sense. But in saying that, it just shows how poor Chelsea have been on the recruitment platform and managing their squad.
Absolutely.
It shows how poor they've been. This is the best of a bad situation, but boy, oh boy, £200,000 a week you're busy paying to a player who doesn't play for you, who actually plays across London. You're paying £200,000 a week for that. It's ludicrous.
That's like giving your bully steroids.
And the thing is, for me, it's about who the match winners are in the Chelsea team. Because when you have a squad the size that they've got, I mean, who is your starting 11? Who are your main players? Who's going to turn games around for you when the chips are down?
Cole Palmer.
Who's going to win the league for you?
He can't be...
Well, Cole Palmer's not going to win the league for you because he's alone, right?
Yes, but exactly.
He's the main man, clearly. They've got talent there.
They do?
They've got Nicholas Jackson, the talented player. They've signed good players.
Madueke is talented.
João Felix is talented.
Yes,
João is
exceptionally talented.
Yeah, they've got a good squad. Chelsea have a very good squad. It's too deep. It's difficult to manage.
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues there. But Chelsea can go on and do well. I don't think any of us would be surprised to be like, hey, Chelsea in Champions League next season. I don't know if we'd be shocked.
Well, in fact, it would be a shock if they're not with all of this.
It should be, right? But we wouldn't be shocked if they're not in the Champions League next season either. Mm. And we would even excuse it. Even if I were a Chelsea fan, I'd be like, it's Maresca's first season. Let's see how they progress. But the concern is, if they finish fifth or sixth at the end of the season, because they start poorly and they're sitting around 10th half the season, then February comes and they start winning games like crazy and you see the style of Maresca coming into play. You're seeing these players start to click, etc. Then they finish fifth or sixth and then the management decides this isn't our guy and then they change over again.
And then it's the same thing again.
Yes.
I'd be deeply concerned as a Chelsea fan. But I mean, we're not going to sit and trash Chelsea again and again and again. I just think it's when it's clear mismanagement and we're not here trashing Chelsea because it's fun, because we're fans of other clubs or anything like that. We're here talking about the management of a club that everyone in the world of football can see is mismanaged.
Yeah.
We can see this is not the way to run a football club. In fact, it looks very much like NFL when you're doing a draft pick where you're just picking up the best talent as a first pick. It looks very much like an American would run a sports team.
Who owns them again?
And as it turns out, who owns them again?
Totally.
there you go.
That's what I'm saying. It certainly appears that way. And you understand that they've had a lot of success in American sports, right? But football's not run in the same way. And the entire world of football can see that they have deep concerns. We're not the only pundits, we'll put it that way, talking about Chelsea in this negative manner. And it's in every joke across the internet on every meme, just like Eric Ten Hag is now this week's meme.
The new joke,
right? Yeah. So at the end of the day, they should be facing criticism for this. My sympathies to Chelsea fans, I hope they prove us wrong. I hope this works out for them longer.
I feel sorry for some of those players because we know how players feel when they don't play. They want to leave. Mm-hmm. Cole Palmer knows what that feels like.
Yes.
Right? And he finds himself in a very different position now where he seems to be playing well. Does it mean the coach will believe in him when the chips are down? I don't know that, right? And so you've got all these other players who are quality players who are going to want to play. And what happens when they don't play? And how does that impact on the team and the
morale,
energy and the spirit and the camaraderie in general? You know, so it's a hot mess at Chelsea.
No, it's a hot mess.
Like then what happens, sorry, Len, and then what happens when a player's not playing well? And it's not working at Chelsea and he's on a 7-year contract and you need to try to get rid of him.
Who's going to want to buy the Sterling situation?
Especially on the wages that you've brought forward on some of these players. Now with financial fair play regulations, there's very few clubs that can afford to pay the sort of wages that Chelsea are paying. And I think they were desperate for a number 9, tried everything they could for Osimhen.
Do they really?
They tried everything they could. They just couldn't financially make the deal happen. Wasn't he overpriced?
They
couldn't make the deal happen. Financial fair play regulations would have never allowed it. They couldn't make that deal happen.
Then Napoli tried to squeeze some extra money out of the Saudis, and it looked like Osimhen was done. It looked like this is the worst deal in football for the guy. And he's lucky enough to have caught a loan move to Galatasaray now, yesterday on the last chance saloon. So at least he can play football, and at least Napoli don't pay his full wages. But I think that Chelsea needed a nine in a way, but they've got sufficient attacking power. Just can they make it work?
Was there any, was there need to actually loan Sancho?
That's an opportunity.
Yeah, that, but the relationship has broken down. And ETH doesn't look like he's got that man management skill.
Yeah.
I think it's very emotional. You know, the way he handled CR7 issue, you know, it was terrible. And also, I mean, Sancho apparently apologized. And then he was being freezed out again. So it was...
No, but I mean for Chelsea, looking at what they
have.
So
I wouldn't say loan. So you must remember that this is a permanent signing loan for now because of financial fair play regulations, right? They're not able to spend the money now.
But they have an obligation to buy.
Not quite obligation, but they have. They will have an obligation based on performance results, right? So if he meets certain criteria, they will be obligated to buy the player. But if Sancho doesn't play well at Chelsea, you will find that even if they're using him and he's an important player in a way, if he's not good enough for them, they will bench him even if the manager wants to use him to make sure that they don't have to buy the player. Because if he makes a certain number of appearances, they'll be obligated to make the purchase at the rate agreed. If Chelsea don't feel that he's worth that money come the end of the season, he's going to be frozen out of the squad again purely because of this contractual agreement.
So it's back to playing PS.
But yeah, I think that he's going to play Fortnite and stuff in the it's what he does.
Yeah.
I mean, how do we get to a point where a player like Sancho, who was tipped to be the future star, probably one of the next gen best players, finds himself in this mangle where he was
Fortnite
at Dortmund.
Fortnite is fun, Mo. Fortnite is fun. It's so much fun. You play till 2-3 in the morning and you can't be an athlete doing that.
And here we are sitting in a situation where he was in a Champions League final last season, right? Something that most, if not, well, exception maybe of Casemiro, most of those United players could never say. Most of these Chelsea players, I'm sure a lot of the guys that won the Champions League are probably gone. Yeah. I stand to be corrected.
Majority of them, I think,
can't say. It's just a strange thing in football.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it just surprises me how a player can go through this kind of thing. I feel the same way about João Félix. I mean, quality player, you know, club or country, he will show up. I thought he was not too bad at Barca. In fact, I thought he was good. I was hoping it would stay, but that's another mess. It's another mess in
good
Catalonia.
Start though, eh?
Yeah.
Solid.
But still a mess.
Yeah. And so you ask yourself, like, where does it go wrong? You know, how do you as a player look at 5 years of your career and you've played for three different clubs? I mean, that's something wrong with that, right?
It's, I mean, like...
But isn't that what Sterling has been doing?
I was going to go to the Sterling thing.
Sterling is one of those
Raheem
guys.
Has proved that everywhere he's gone. He's performed well. It's not like he's left clubs because he's not been playing well there.
Yeah.
He went from Liverpool to City as the best player in the Premier League, arguably, because City had the money and he was going to go win titles there. Then he's not an old player. He's 29 years old now. But he seemed to, he's the sort of player that got kicked a lot, played many, many hours with a lot of sprints. So the performance levels required for Manchester City perhaps weren't quite there anymore. And it was an opportunity to get money for him before.
It's too late.
Yeah. And City have a deep squad. Chelsea came in. It was a big money move. And he performed quite well at Chelsea.
Yeah.
Actually, in fact, I think he's one of the better performers at Chelsea.
From last season.
And I would argue that he's performed very well at Chelsea relative to the problems that they faced on and off the pitch. And now he's going to Arsenal because it's an opportunity for him to go there. So it's not something going wrong with Sterling. He's just playing at different clubs because he's been good, in fact, not because he's been bad. Whereas Sancho, definitely he's been disappointing in terms of the expectations set upon a player like Jadon Sancho. And he's chopping and changing clubs because he's disappointing on the pitch. And it seems like there are...
some sort of issues off the pitch in terms of his commitment to the game.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like, and maybe it's an old school way of thinking, I'd love to see, especially a player like Raheem Sterling, to see out a good while at a football club. I didn't think he was necessarily done at Chelsea. I still think there was so much more with Chelsea trying to realign and rejig everything to try and get going, win something, etc. So it was a strange thing that I heard from the Chelsea coach on how he felt about Sterling,
mm-hmm.
right? And again, it's a question of, and I'm glad you brought up the point around his performance, because yes, when you look at his performance, he hasn't really dropped a ball at any football club that he's played, right? So does it just go down as another one of those that there will be players like that who are at that level, who can play at a high level, but just never stick around?
It says here, I'm Gift saying his PR team forced him out of Chelsea.
No, I don't know.
I mean, that statement, it was just, I mean, the timing was awful.
Okay, wait. I think I get what where the comment's coming
from. Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. His PR team forced him out of the
club. With a statement.
But with that statement, yeah.
Because the window was closing and the writing was on the wall already. So it's his PR team did it from a position of having to, right? It was at the point of we have to force this move because we can see what's coming. I think that there might be, look, managers want certain things. Different managers want to impart their style. If you go to a big football club, I had a lot of criticism for David Moyes when he came in because he shuffled things around at Man United more than what was needed. It was a successful club for years and years and years. Just stick to what we're doing well. Bring in your stuff slowly. Don't ruffle it up. Mm. But managers don't have time. You have to assert your style, your way very quickly in a big football team. And maybe Sterling doesn't fit the style of play that Maresca wants to achieve at the club. Maybe his legs are a bit behind him and Maresca wants a certain type of winger in his team that can run and run and run and run. And he's got a lot of youth in that side. So that might be his objectives. But it also might be, once again, this financial fair play regulation issue that keeps popping up for everyone at the moment that's changing football, especially for the Premier League, because they've been spending freely for years and years and years. And I think that Raheem Sterling's on really, really big wages. And he might have been cut out of that squad saying, listen, guys, we've got loads of players here. Sterling is not necessarily that critical to allow us to impede our financial fair play responsibility, the way we've been signing players, etc.
Mm-hmm.
We need to shift some of our wage bill. And that player is the biggest wage earner at our club. Shift him. Shift him quickly. And they didn't do it well. They're still paying a lot of money for him. But probably by the end of the season, now they don't have a player on those sort of wages. And other players within the squad like Cole Palmer is not going to be looking at it and being like, you've just given me a new contract, but I'm still not the biggest earner at this club. I'm by far the best player, right? So pay parity is an issue. You need to reduce that wage bill. So I think it's a combination of all of those things is what happened to Raheem Sterling.
So then begs the question, how is he going to fare there by you there?
Yeah, tell us, Len.
how is he going to perform?
He can just play football.
Because there's nothing wrong with Arsenal. Yes. I mean, we can talk about choking. We can talk about... you know, whatever, but there's essentially nothing wrong with Arsenal. True. And let's not go with the Brighton result, because we all know that when Brighton want to play, they will play straight and they will make things difficult. So where...
I think he will...
What is he going to bring?
Most likely will be starting from the bench, because, I mean, the pecking order is just...
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Still have Trossard out there?
There's Trossard, there's Martinelli... But there's Jesus who's still injured.
Yeah.
So the pecking order at Arsenal is it's.
But the beauty about Sterling is he's a very good system player. So he knows how to fit in. So it's gonna be very much easy for him to settle in, and he knows Arteta's philosophy from the days at Manchester City. Maybe so I think it was a good move for Sterling.
Maybe Arteta uses him as a nine. Who knows?
I don't think that's the case. I think it's a masterclass from Arsenal, as per usual, the club that has built the best squad with the least money. And that goes to show you how good of a job Edu and his team are doing there. And I think this is a masterstroke. Chelsea are paying most of a player's wages.
Yeah.
We are pushing for a title. And what happened last season, if Saka's not having a good game, Saka keeps having a bad game because there's no one to really essentially replace Saka. Now you've got a player that if you need squad rotation, there's a lot of games coming up. There's Champions League football, there's Cup football, there's League football. Raheem Sterling is as good an option as Arsenal could possibly find to deputize for Saka on the days he's either playing poorly, is too tired, or is injured. It's a masterstroke from them. They're paying fairly low wages. He's on loan, and they can go back to the market next season for perhaps a younger player that can suit the style a little bit more. And hey, if they've got a Premier League title under their belt that Sterling helped them win, that's not going to be a bad way to find another player either.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Also considering the wealth of experience that Sterling has in playing the most intense football. I mean, if you just look at Champions League, when it really, you know, gets to that pressure cooker moment. And I don't know if every single Arsenal player would be able to rise to the occasion.
Yeah, they're not playing as against
a Real Madrid at the Bernabeu, who can be poor in La Liga, but just turn it up in the Champions League. And so I think you're right. I think for Arsenal, all factors considered, not bad. And an interesting dynamic considering that Saka is junior in age, right?
Yes. Yep.
To Sterling. And yet, in a way, Sterling is almost going to be a deputy, even at national team level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we going to say anything about Tottenham?
Spurs.
Oh, no.
Spurs. Oh, you mean Spurs the Spurs where we eat?
You mean the people with a taste for life?
Yeah, you mean the ribs.
Look, you know with them, it's you. They cannot be a top four team if they continue to play good, but not convert their chances.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be singing the same chorus every week. And that is essentially what Spurs is. Did Harry Kane leave with all the goals?
I was about to say, is this like a Harry Kane sort of hangover? Or is it a question of, well, you know, we're in denial that Kane was important to us? I mean, I don't know what. I mean, I've seen some of their games. And one day, you know, they're great glimpses and everybody's on song. And when Sun is on song, it kind of works for... But it's almost like a one-trick pony.
Yes.
It feels like... There's nothing else that they can do if the sun is not shining.
Yeah.
Mm. I think the short answer is yes, it's still a Harry Kane hangover. But I think which team wouldn't suffer that hangover? City? Perhaps the only one in English football that wouldn't suffer some level of hangover. Harry Kane was goals. He's one of the biggest goal scorers in the Premier League history, right? So, of course, you're going to suffer that. They've only just now effectively replaced Harry Kane with Dominic Solanke. He's had one game and he's injured. I think that was a very important move for Spurs. As we look forward into the rest of the season, we're going to see it become more important for the simple reason that even if Solanke isn't phenomenally good and change the season for Spurs, it allows Song Heung-min to gravitate back to a more natural position of his and play off of a regular number nine, which Spurs weren't able to do last season. So I think it bodes well for Spurs, but again, Spurs don't have the money to compete with City and they don't have the squad to compete with Arsenal. So it's going to be a slow progression. And I think they are on that road of slow progression. Luckily, I don't think they have the most expectant fans in the world. They've not won anything for years and years and years. So
and they continue to not.
Yeah. Yeah, well, sometimes you have to be, right?
But they're very grumpy. It's also not fair on Spurs.
Look, if Spurs played in Italy, they would have won a couple titles by now. It's just they play in the hardest league in the world.
Yes.
You know, so they're a good side. I think they'll continue to grow and continue to get better. But to overcome that next hurdle to become Arsenal, City, Liverpool, that is an incredible barrier to break. So I think they're doing well for who they are, and I'll continue to see them progress. I think they will continue to get better. I think the manager's pretty good. I think that he could do with a little pragmatism. He could do with an assistant in his ear saying, hey, listen, let's shore up things a little bit. This is exciting. This is great. But once we've got a goal or two against a tough team, let's shut up shop a little bit. Let's be more pragmatic in a way. Or let's start games pragmatic even against more difficult sides and then take it to them. So if these sort of things are implemented, we're going to see a very good Spurs team. But we can't honestly sit here and say to anyone watching this and being like, hey, Spurs fan, we expect you in the next 3-4 years to go win a title.
Nope.
That is incredibly hard.
That's
hostile thinking. We can't honestly say that. We can't just sit here and honestly say, listen, this is where Spurs are going to be. Spurs are going to be one of those top six sides for a while, and I think they'll continue to improve. And then maybe over a long enough period, things can happen that adjust for them. But as of right now, I think they'll continue to grow and do slightly better, but they're never going to become phenomenally good.
They just look like a team that have to play together. When I look at all those players, they don't look like a group of players who – all sort of believe in what they do and even in their roles. It just looks like a team that has to play together because we are here. And that will always, and that's why, you know, sure bet, I would go for a Brighton on any day if I were to choose between the two. Because when you watch Brighton, you get a different feeling. You get the feeling that these guys are playing for each other. There's a spirit, there's a camaraderie. It's not just a group of players just stuck together, shifted to, and they've had their own sort of changes in management, but something just keeps sort of ticking in a positive way. They have a massive ceiling between where they are and where they want to be. And they'll probably, in my view, if they carry on this way, do much better than Spurs this season.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Look, the way Brighton is playing, yes, also perhaps might be too soon to say, but Fabian is doing one hell of a stellar job.
I'm very impressed with him.
At 31 years,
very
like,
young, yeah.
You're
very
coaching
impressed.
Somebody who's like 7 years older than you there. He's like, hey, Malume.
You know? I said that. You know?
But he's able to put to keep that team together. He's able to get them to be as enterprising as they are. He's able to get them to be a team that knows that until the final whistle is gone, we have not lost this game. And you almost get the sense that Spurs, it when you're watching them, it feels like they labor through a game.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just difficult. Even the errors actually come easier than the good things. I don't know. It just feels...
Tedious.
And we've seen way better Spurs teams in previous years that have done some really great things in terms of bringing quality players through and also to playing really like hard-hitting football, especially when they need to. I don't see that with this team.
Yeah, sad story for Spurs. But the one thing that pissed me off this weekend was Everton.
Why they threw it away at the end?
Threw it away at the end, and
are you pissed off because your bet slip or?
Well, one that, but generally, sometimes it gets very painful to see teams like your Everton's go down because going to the Premiership, going to the EFL, it's very difficult to come back up. They might still catch a case and lose points.
They're still that, yeah.
And three games in and still not a point. Already a team that was promoted in Ipswich, they've already bagged a point with their draw against Fulham.
Yeah, look, everyone who watches this show regularly knows I'm a big fan of Sean Dyche. So I think he'll sort them out and I think they'll be just about fine. But it's going to be a long, hard road for Everton. Even if they survive this season, they're going to be there and thereabouts again next season. And this is going to keep going. And there's going to be more talks of changes of ownership. And there's going to be more of this and more of that. It's a long, hard road for Everton. They might not survive this season. It's going to be a tough season to survive. But I'm a big fan of Sean Dyche. I think he'll sort it out. I think they've got some quality there. I think they'll be fine come the end. But they're going to be there and thereabouts for sure.
All right, quick one before we wrap it up. Or did you want to mention something?
Yes. I just wanted to get your guys' views. I mean, the bottom three teams right now is Wolves, Southampton and Everton, like you've just mentioned right now. Is that what we were expecting? You would remember we spoke about how we thought the newcomers are going to be the ones already sitting at the bottom and it's the only one that's relatively new, Southampton. What do we make of that?
We said, didn't we say we think Ipswich might not be... No, we said Ipswich might not be in the
bottom. Oh, we said Forest is going to come down.
We said Forest.
Yeah.
We mentioned Wolves would be problematic. Yes. We also had some concerns about Fulham. I think I'll take that back. I think they've got good players there with a lot of experience. But Wolves was one we were concerned with already at the beginning. Forest was one we were concerned with. Leicester was one of the newcomers that we said we'd be concerned with because of the financial issues and they've changed manager, etc. But Mr. Cooper is a wily, old, experienced customer and they've still got goals in Jamie Vardy, clearly. So maybe Leicester will be just about fine as long as they're not docked 20 points for financial issues.
1-1
You mean 1-1-5, friend?
Guys, we'll talk in January. We don't know what's going on yet.
Anyway, quick one before we get out of here. Bafana squad, we're playing against Uganda on Friday, AFCON qualifier. What have you made of Bruce and just coming in and just the whole shape of the squad and Jay just?
I think Bafana is playing brilliant football. And I say brilliant because there's progress.
Yep.
Okay. Right? We haven't even hit the ceiling. We've got a lot of young players. We've got a lot of players who are peaking. And we don't have a lot of players who are on the other side of 30, which is a good thing. Which is a good thing for a team that is hoping to qualify for a World Cup, hoping to qualify for an AFCON as well. So I love the approach that Bruce has at the moment. We didn't see it when he started, when he was complaining about the age of some of the players. Yeah. And maybe there's things...
And just the coaches not really playing along with him.
Yeah, and there's many things that he probably didn't see either. But what he's done with this mix and the group and the balance is superb. A lot of people were talking about Pirates' Mabasa, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's banging in goals week in, week out, but he doesn't get a call up. But so is Reyners, right? Yeah.
And he's excellent as well.
And he's excellent as well. And do you really want to waste a Lyle Foster who's playing at a higher level than all the forwards in the team? And so even with that mix, I don't mind if Mabasa's not in the team. Do I want him in the team at some point? Absolutely. At some point, you know, for me, if Reyners doesn't, you know, get going in these two games, for example, I would say, Bruce, all right, let's give Mabasa a run.
Yeah.
You've got nothing to lose, right? Use your best players in the league that you have and get the top players that are playing at a high level in Europe in to get a nice mix. So I like this team. We shouldn't lose against Uganda.
Nope.
I mean, looking at the last game we played against Zimbabwe, looking at the game against Nigeria, which we actually should have won.
Yes.
On the back of that, the only problem and the worry I have is a lot of the players haven't been playing. The league
hasn't really started. Yeah.
It's only the Pirates players, you know, some Staley's players, Sundowns players who really have a run. And so what sort of impact will that have on the national team?
That's actually never thought about that. Some of the overseas guys have played as well. The Lyle Fosters have played because the championship has started. But yeah, if we're going to look at all the other guys that are in the squad.
Where does Ngezana play again? In Turkey?
In Romania.
In Romania.
Yeah, and he's been playing.
He's just arrived also.
So I think it's just a case of, and I mean, you've seen the number of players that Bruce cut from the squad. Like the Ronwens are not there. The Percy Tawus are not there. Because those are the star players, but they haven't really been playing because Percy is busy dealing with contractual issues there at Al Ahly there.
I think Ronwen is injured.
Ronwen is injured. Otherwise, he would have been playing for Mamelodi Sundowns.
I think it's a case of he knows, even with that fear that we have, I think Hugo knows that, okay, with the game that's coming on Friday, I know who I'm going to play because the legs have started running yet, as opposed to those ones that, yes, I trust you, but your legs have not really started running yet.
Yeah, I respect that.
Yeah, no, look, he's cooking. I'm just worried about his age, though. <That's>,
that is going to be another Biden situation. I hope not. Where he puts Mufokeng in goal because you know the wires are crossing.
Retirement.
Speaking of goal, guys. So in the absence of Ronwen, and we know that previously Velu Mutwa was always kind of a trusted goalkeeper in the national team in these sort of recent years, but now there's Vuma in there as well.
Yes.
Right. So who do you put in there when Ronwen is not there?
I think, by my calculation, Ricardo Goss.
Ricardo Goes or Chain? Chain is there.
Chain,
right?
Is also there.
Yeah, I think it's Chain who's there, right?
Chain is there. And I think he's done exceptionally well in the past few games. And he's got the legs, like Lenny was saying, that he's been playing. So I think it would make sense to play.
Who's more experienced in continental football when it comes to being short stopping?
I think it would be
Ricardo. Is it Chain or is it Ricardo?
I think Ricardo.
Because sometimes we need experience when it comes to these types of show pieces.
Experience from the bench at Sundowns.
Eh? Yeah, he flew with the team.
But what do you say, okay, we're playing at home at Orlando Stadium, right?
Yeah.
Clean.
Chain is used to that. Clean. It's comfortable. Yeah. Put him in goal.
I think it's easier that way.
There's an understanding. I don't know what his back four will be, but I don't think there are going to be massive communication issues. So, you know, if I'm a Bruce, that's who I would start with in goal. On Friday.
That's actually a worry. Hey, not having your number one goalkeeper going to a game of this magnitude is quite a concern, actually.
I think.
But are we playing Rwanda, friend?
No.
Uganda.
Uganda.
Yeah.
Rwanda did us dirty.
I'm not too worried about our opponent. Hence the team that we have, and we're playing at home. And I think the support is going to be there, given one, people have been football hungry for a while locally. Two, because of the trajectory that Bafana has had with the AFCON and going to Nigeria, getting a result, Bloom beating Zimbabwe, people now want to watch Bafana.
Yeah.
There's there's that belief, actually. You know?
So if the fans are there, it's like, guys, okay, cool, let's go. Velimoto, he might start. We don't know. Ricardo Goss might start. We don't know. But the sense that makes sense is the logic. I think it was Mo who said it, that you play for Pirates, we're playing at Orlando. It's your home.
It's
you
home.
Know what's
it's
in the dressing room.
Yes.
So just take it
you
out.
You know where's that
street.
Little mooty there?
You know where to hang it on the
exactly.
And also, the excitement around Bafana is palpable. And I don't know when last I saw a player coming on and getting so much excitement from the crowd, like when Rile Mofokeng came on against Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, he plays in the PSL, so fans know him. But that is such a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it should inspire every single player in that team to say, people are watching you, right? Not everything on social media is gospel. So if you believe in yourself, the support is there, then you should have the encouragement to want to play at a really top level while you're on the field. The only thing I'm kind of disappointed about is that we're playing in Johannesburg.
Did you want a Bloem situation?
I wanted a game somewhere.
It should have gone back to Bloem,
Mpumalanga,
I think. Mpumalanga.
Where there's no easy access.
You understand?
Yeah, true.
To these teams.
That's the only worry I have to say, hey, why is it Joburg again?
Yeah, because Joburgers can disappoint. Eh?
Easily.
We've spoken about this, you know, that those people in Mpumalanga deprived of football, they deserve to have Bafana and
absolutely
be showed in Bloemfontein. I mean, that stadium was packed.
I think you know how we always go on about how supporters do not go to the stadium, but you're probably the only person who has been going to the stadium and none of us have been. So can we lead by example?
So you're also guilty.
Can we lead by example?
I've said my reasons. I'm stadiumed out.
What does that even mean?
No, he means there's no wheelchairs for, you know, older people. But we need to go, you guys. I feel like it's only right.
No. We will go. I just like, it's like
they have ramps now, my friend. Don't worry.
I've been to stadium so many times. Like, I just got there. But we should be able to beat Uganda, right?
Yeah, we should easily beat Uganda and South Sudan.
I think the Sudan one will be slightly tricky.
Yeah,
because
we are away.
There's travel involved and we don't know what sort of situation we're going to find that side. And we've seen how things are always made to be so difficult for Bafana when they travel on the continent, right? And I'll bet it's generally deliberately.
Of course it's deliberate. It
is. We don't offer the same kind of hostility. When other countries come here, you know, they get really top class. Right now, where they're going to land? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a stone throw away. It's a stone throw away from Orlando Stadium.
We're not even
Stadium.
Taking them to Pampir Stad.
We're not taking them to Pampir. We should have gone to Royal Bafokeng.
Yeah.
We should. You know what I mean? So they're getting that benefit. And so I don't know. I hope Dr. Patrice Motsepe will do something about that at a higher level. Because we can't have a situation where teams are being put through hostilities by host countries for reasons that are,
that's not the case only when Bafana is playing. But I mean, continentally, we know that our teams would go and play, you know, certain teams, and you know, the circumstances are never to their favor. But whenever they come, you know, play here at home, it's a different case. So yes, Mr. Motsepe has to do something. In fact, I think he's increased now the amount of money he's giving the heads of the respective federations. So
he's giving Danilo Dan.
Does that mean? More money for the fat cats?
Yeah,
come on.
He's increasing the money. So I'm hoping that at some point there's going to be something that's going to be done, because it's really unfair to our players.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, our boy, like, you know, steak and lobster type of boys. So it's unfair.
Good
not
luck,
lying.
Bafana. I think we need to wrap up here. Mo Flavor, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
It's absolutely pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you to Mr. Len Moleko for holding it down in my absence. Thank you, as always, Tepi, darling.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you, Mr. Supercell.
Danko.
And thank you to all of you, the ballers, of course. And a big thank you to Betway for sponsoring the premiership. It is so nice. And like I said earlier, I think the big thing that stands out for me is just in my conversations with the team there is, and we can see it in fruition as we look forward to the new Betway trophy, etc., is football first, whatever our benefits are second.
And I love that element of it. But again, thank you, thank you, thank you to the Ballers. Remember to stay onside with us and Betway. Don't be offside.
Be onside.
Be onside with us and Betway. Get way more. Boo, boo, boo,
boo.
Burning, you guys.